May it please the court. I'm Scott Howey. I represent one of the defendants appellants in this matter, Chicago Masonry Construction. Atlantic Casualty has a duty to defend Chicago Masonry, as well as Prince Contractors and 4929 Forest LLC, against the underlying Rybaltowski action, because its liability insurance policy covers bodily injury claims and does not clearly exclude the claim of Mr. Rybaltowski. Mr. Rybaltowski's employer did not clearly fall within Atlantic Casualty's definition of contractor, because it's not clear what is meant in that definition
Did your client have other insurance?
There was other insurance involved, yes, Your Honor.
Like what?
It was provided. It had its own general liability policy provided by the Pekin Insurance Company. That coverage is not at issue in this appeal because it was never at issue in the underlying case. The question strictly was whether Atlantic Casualty is entitled or is obligated to provide a defense. And the only argument against that defense was its policy exclusion.
What I mean is whether you had an insurance policy that would unequivocally cover this this accident to an employee of someone who has not yet signed a contract.
Well, there isn't any evidence in the record that suggests that there was any basis for Atlantic Casualty not to provide coverage. That policy, if that's what you're referring to, that policy does unequivocally cover this claim, if the exclusion on which the company relies does not apply. And the facts in this case show.
I'm just wondering if there are any insurance policies floating around which would cover the gap which this case would create if we affirmed.
I can't answer that with confidence, Your Honor. I can only speak to the policy that's at issue in this case as to whether it covers. There may have been other policies as well that conceivably in other cases and other facts might share coverage. Conceivably other policies might be a primary where this one might be in excess. This case doesn't present any of those questions because the only defense that Atlantic Casualty has raised is its exclusion. And the question of whether that exclusion applies is the crux of this appeal. The issue turns specifically on the definition of contractor because the exclusion excludes coverage for employees of contractors. And contractor is defined, it's a long definition, but the relevant portion to this appeal is that it includes anyone who is providing materials and or services of any kind. And the district court considered that language to be incredibly broad in the language that the district court used. But in finding that was broad enough to encompass what Raincoat Solutions was doing, that was Mr. Rybaltowski's employer, in finding that the language was broad enough to encompass its activities, the district court erred. And its decision absolving Atlantic Casualty of its duty to defend must be reversed. As a threshold matter...
Is that because the only evidence is that he was... that the person who was injured was working on a mock-up?
That is part of it, Your Honor.
Atlantic said that he was doing some other work as well.
Atlantic Casualty's description in this court has been that not just Mr. Rybaltowski, but Raincoat Solutions, his employer, which really just consisted of him and his boss, their argument has been that they were working on the project, including the mock-up. But the evidence doesn't support that. What the evidence shows is that the only thing they did prior to the accident that injured Mr. Rybaltowski was the mock-up. And it's significant that this was just a demonstration mock-up. It was an audition for the job. It was a sales pitch, really. It was a demonstration on something...
Don't auditioners provide services?
It's not clear what services might include.
Well, suppose you wanted to put on a play, and you asked some theatrical management company, told them, look, I want you to bring 20 actors to the theater... I only have 5 parts, but I want to make sure I have the 5 best. So I want this large group of auditioners, and I'll pick the 5 best. Aren't all those auditioners providing a service to the theater?
No, Your Honor. It's not clear that that would satisfy that definition. It's possible that one could say that those extra auditioners provide some collateral benefit, that they do something that has some, that provides some sort of incidental benefit to the producers of the play. But to call that a service and to say that it is unequivocally a service and must be interpreted as such, I think doesn't respect the ambiguity of what services means. In fact, services and or materials and the notion of providing services and or materials is interpreted too broadly by the district court, largely because there is no definition of those terms. Just as a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, a definition is only as clear as its most ambiguous terms. And in this case, those ambiguous terms are materials and services. I can even concede, Your Honor, that it might be possible to regard what Raincoat Solutions was doing in making its bid, which was primarily for its own benefit. It might be conceivable that that could be viewed as a service of some sort. But it's not clear that that is the only reasonable interpretation of it. And certainly that when a potential contractor, a would-be contractor, someone who is hoping to be awarded the work, is making a bid for that work and doing something primarily for its own benefit, for its own advantage, that is something that is not clearly a service.
The word contractor itself is ambiguous, isn't it? I mean, you might ask a person, what do you do for a living? You could say, oh, I'm a building contractor, I'm a plumbing contractor. You're not talking about a specific contract. You're saying that's what I do. So these companies here, maybe including Chicago Masonry, but Pasco might say, yeah, we're contractors.
And in a sense, Your Honor, they are contractors. And certainly at a point along the facts of this case, subsequent to the accident, they became the weatherproofing contractors in every sense of the word. And to Atlantic Casualty's credit, they've attempted to reduce that ambiguity by writing a definition.
They don't define the word contractor, right?
Beg your pardon?
They don't define the word contractor. They list different types of contractor, but they don't actually define.
I think that's a fair interpretation, Your Honor. What we've called a definition is a list of a number of examples.
A list of examples, exactly, yeah.
Perhaps a non-exhaustive list. But the relevant part of that list is those persons who are providing services and or materials of any kind. And while that might be a broad term, implicit in providing materials and or services of any kind is the notion of providing services and materials of some kind. And it isn't absolutely clear, and it must be. It must be clear if the company intends to rely upon this exclusion for the purpose of excluding coverage, for denying coverage, and denying a duty to defend, it must be able to show that it clearly applies. And there isn't any way of saying that it does, in fact, clearly apply. The attempt to define the term by either an actual definition or a list of examples, as Your Honor observes, doesn't do any good. It doesn't eliminate the ambiguity if the definition or the list is itself ambiguous. Atlantic Casualty could have written a definition.
You're going into your rebuttal, but you do whatever you want to.
Thank you, Your Honor. They could have written this definition more broadly. They chose not to. And by not eliminating the ambiguity as to what is a material or a service and what it means to provide it, they haven't excluded this coverage clearly, and therefore the district court's decision must be reversed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Howey. Mr. Carlson?
Justice, to answer your first question, Justice Posner, there is other insurance issues. In fact, Pekin, as he admitted, is the insurer providing the defense here and contesting this coverage, has a separate declaratory where they insure Chicago Masonry and were seeking to deny coverage to the other contractors, Prince and Forrest, under an exclusion in the Circuit Court of Cook County, and where that has already been a decision rendered where Pekin was, their exclusion was found to be invalid and that they owed a defense to the other two contractors.
No, my concern is different. It seems to me if I were Chicago Masonry or the owner of the construction site, I would want to make sure that I had insurance against a situation in which a contractor's employee sued me, right? I need that protection because I don't have the workman's compensation shield because I'm not his employee. So what kind of insurance
they have a general?
Yeah. In other words, assuming your exclusion is as broad as you argue, what should I, you know, as a construction site owner, what should I do to cover what you exclude?
They do. Their insurer is providing them a defense in the case. The owner, Prince and Forrest, 4949, have their general liability insurance as providing them a defense for their negligence, and they're here today. They're providing that defense. Chicago Masonry, a subcontractor, has insurance with Pekin, providing them a defense. Also, Chicago Forrest and Prince had insurance, additional insurance from Pekin, which Pekin contested, saying an exclusion applied. Mr. Howey's firm litigated that, saying that the exclusion was not was clear enough, but they lost that in the circuit court. So there's various layers of insurance. Every party in the case, every defendant has insurance of one or more insurance companies protect them from this for their alleged negligence in this lawsuit. The question is, of course, the insurers, in reality, don't want to cover, they want to pass the loss on to somebody else if they possibly can. And that's why you have these really battles that usually are, in reality, battles between insurers as to who has to ultimately pick up.
If I'm the construction site owner and I'm sued by Robitowski and I have this same type of insurance policy, I won't, on your view, I won't be covered, right? So I'm wondering, what kind of insurance do I get to cover that gap?
The gap, they already have the general liability insurance for themselves, for their own negligence. They have that insurance. It's general liability insurance to cover you for bodily injury or property damage caused by an occurrence.
Have the same exclusion?
No,
it
does not.
Is it a different type of policy?
It's different, because it's a different entity. It depends. It's a policy that is written directly to Forrest and Prince. That covers them for their negligence, but doesn't have the, because it's not their employee who's suing. If it was their employee, they'd have comp insurance. Right. Here, they would have workers' comp insurance for Pasco. You know, Pasco. It's Rainboat's employee. They would have comp insurance. You know, it depends. Not everybody buys insurance. You know, insurance doesn't cover every situation. You talked earlier about the contractor definition, where it lists certain, identifies who is a contractor. So it's telling you certain people are contractors and are not covered, but you said it's not, as he admits, it's not exclusive. The district court found in rejecting their illusory argument, which they've abandoned on appeal, that there's other categories where people would be covered. So, but then the whole point is, under the contract, it's not, can I get the insurance that covers everything in the world for this particular price, or do you look at the actual contract and what the contract was between the parties and interpret it under contract interpretation rules?
I'm just not following you. So I'm a construction site owner. I have a bunch of subcontractors. They all have employees. I have no, my workers' comp insurance will not protect me if one of these people sues me. And I have this general liability policy, won't I be exposed to, I will have no insurance if the employees of my contractors sue me because of your exclusion, right?
Under this particular policy, you might not have coverage for that.
But another policy?
Correct. And they did. And that's why you...
They have a policy that doesn't have the exclusion?
Correct. They do. And that's who's providing their defense here. And that's who's Pekins also now has been found to additionally insure them under yet another policy in the state court. You have to look at each individual policy. You
why
can buy...
Why are they going after Atlantic if they have...
Because they don't want to pay it. That's why you see the disputes really...
They being the...
Insurer.
Is this one of these situations where where a company that has two insurance companies covering it goes after the one which isn't its regular insurer because it doesn't want to have a higher premium?
This doesn't involve really a Burns tender, so to speak, but that's the concept there. Because in Burns tenders cases, Your Honor, it's usually the insurer, in reality, it's the insurer who is pushing their insurer to pass it on to another insurer. That's the reality. That's the economics of it. Everybody would like someone else to pay their loss. The general wants the downstream contractors to always insure. You can't come on the job site unless you insure me for everything I might do wrong. Everybody wants to pass it on to somebody else. But if we're here about a social discussion of that and whether that's proper or not in contract and risk transfer and what's fair or what's not fair, but here I think we're here to interpret in this case the language of this contract, which the court below found was unambiguous and enforceable.
But is there any evidence that Robitowski did anything besides the working on the mock-up?
Well, of course, here we're getting into the depositions of the underlying case. The same law firm that was representing Prince and Forrest in the underlying case is using the deposition testimony in that case to bolster their coverage case. So that gets to the whole issue, of course. In Pekin versus Wilson, first of all, if we just look at the allegations of the complaint alleges that they were contractors and subcontractors. Clearly, and they don't even dispute that. The district court didn't dispute that, and they didn't dispute that. If you look at the pleadings alone, under the traditional test of comparing the pleadings to the policy, there would be absolutely no doubt that the exclusion applied. They say, wait, we can go beyond that because of Pekin versus Wilson, a case Mr. Howie was, for Pekin, was arguing the other side just about 2 years ago, that you couldn't go beyond the underlying complaint. And now, of course, Pekin versus Wilson said only in unusual and compelling circumstances. You don't just always go beyond the underlying complaint. In Pekin versus Wilson, there was a tort case where the plaintiff was suing, saying another party injured him. The counterclaim filed by the insured, Pekin's insured, asserted self-defense. The expected or intended exclusion that Pekin was relying upon had an exception where you were acting in self-defense. But the tort plaintiff, no tort plaintiff would sue somebody saying, you attacked me, but you were acting in self-defense. They would never allege this, so it wouldn't be in the pleading itself. And Pekin said, no, you can only look at that pleading. And the court said, well, that would render the exception a nullity if you never could look at the counterclaim. Mm-hmm. So in that unusual circumstance, we're going to go beyond the pleadings, the complaint, determine the duty to defend, and look at the counterclaim, which alleges self-defense, which triggers the exception to the expected or intended exclusion, and therefore the court found, contrary to Mr. Howie's argument, that there was a duty to defend, and therefore we get to the case now where it's argued that basically Pekin versus Wilson allows you to look at anything virtually. And even if you did look at anything, Your Honor, this is very self-selective because it was the same lawyers trying to develop in the tort case something that would help in their coverage case about a contract. Of course, initially they argued below there had to be a written contract, the contractor meant a written contract. They've abandoned that argument on appeal, and now they're arguing this standard canard of everything's ambiguous. If you don't subdefine every word, there's an ambiguity. Now, and if you looked, but even if you accepted their premise, that this was an unusual case where you go beyond the pleadings and looking at the underlying facts, they ignore other testimony. Mr. Koshiba, the owner of Raincoat Solutions, also testified he'd been out to the site 3 times before the accident happened. The first time he did the bid. The second time he came back with the contract and the color samples, and he said he had an agreement. He testified in the record, I had an agreement for the price, the scope of the work. Only thing he had to do was choose the color. They're ignoring that testimony. You can't say go beyond the underlying complaint and look at the testimony and only look at selective portions where they asked certain questions that they got an answer they thought was helpful to establishing it's only a bid. He says he has a contract. He doesn't have a written contract. It's already in the hands of the owner. He says the only thing left to do, he testifies into the record clearly, is to approve the color and sign the contract. He goes in there with his materials, with his worker, does the work, comes out, looks for him. Here's ivory or stone. Which one do you like better? He chooses stone. What is materials or services? You know, the economy in the United States is called either a service economy or a manufacturing economy. What is he doing? He's providing services to the general contractor. He's already done the work. He's already been approved for price and scope of work, and he has to choose a color. He's showing the evidence of his work, the materials he's created from his services, to the owner. Choose which color, which one you want to approve. And the accident happens. Okay? So how can that not be providing its materials and or services?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Your time has expired. So, Mr. Howie, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay.
May it please the Court. In the interest of full disclosure, I should note that I am hired and paid by Pekin Insurance Company. There isn't any question here that my client, but I am representing Chicago Masonry.
That's fine, of course.
My client has never made the argument that a denial in this court will result in there being no insurance whatsoever. But the existence of other insurance doesn't absolve a casualty of its obligations. Moreover, Mr. Carlson misinterprets the holding and the gist of Pekin versus Wilson. It did not hold that only in unusual and compelling circumstances may the court look beyond the pleadings in determining the duty to defend. It held that in any situation where the court will not be deciding or resolving an issue crucial to the underlying case, it may look to the...
But we can assume, can't we, for purposes of the suit, that this visit where Robitoski was injured, this was... in contemplation, at least, of a contract, and that he was working on the mock-up in order to let them choose a color, and then he's injured. That much is not in dispute, is it?
Well, he wasn't injured in the course of doing the mock-up, but apart from that, yes, that is absolutely that is undisputed. If I might take a moment to complete an answer to that, there was more to it than the notion of just choosing a color and signing a contract. In fact, the evidence shows it's page 322 of the record at document 53-3. Mr. Kashiba, the president, the owner of Raincoat Solutions, testified in direct response to a question. He was asked, "You were done working for the day at the job site, correct?" He said, "Right." "And you were just basically waiting around?" The answer, "For Mr. Prince to approve the color and my job." And the next question, "If Mr. Prince didn't approve the job, you don't have a contract and you are done ever going back to this site, correct?" Answer, "That's true." So there was more than just approving.
Well, I understand. No contract signed. Yeah. I just want to make clear.
And in fact, no agreement yet even to hire them. So there was more than just choosing the color. It was approving this company.
Right, but certain other terms had been negotiated.
There were agreements over what would be done, how long it might take, what they would be paid, what color to use, but all were contingent upon being given the job, and that was the crucial thing that prevented them from being a contractor within the meaning of the definition at the time of the accident.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Howie and Mr. Carlson. We'll move on to our last case, United States versus Arch.